Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
There's gold fever on the streets of St. Paul.
A billion-dollar con.
We finally hit the big time.
A jackpot.
There was no sign of anything that was amiss.
Everybody wanted to get rich.
The $6 billion gold scam from the BBC World Service and CBC. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's too good to be true. It's too good to be true.
Here in the Kilimani parts of Nairobi, you'd be spoiled for choice for Chinese food. There's not one, but two Chinatowns right next to each other. One is called Chinatown, the other is China City. There's also China Center and China Square in other parts of Nairobi. Chinese infrastructure is visible almost everywhere in the city, but particularly in this area. And right next door, towering over these mini China hubs, as if to oversee it all, is the Chinese Xinhua News Agency.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. For this episode, I travelled to the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, to get a sense of the Chinese influence on the ground. There have been signs of a cooling down of this friendship, and I wanted to take the temperature. I'm Crassie Twig, and this is the Global Jigsaw from BBC Monitoring, where we look at the world through the lens of its media.
Radio Tehran.
Мы не вторгались на территорию Украины.
Western countries are not the international community. That era has finished.
조종 두 당 두 나라 최고 영도자 동지들께서는.
Let's take you first to the fictional African village Milele, courtesy of a Chinese soap opera. It's a feast for the eyes. Beautiful people, amazing landscape, some romance, and a bit of blood.
Dr. Zhao has lost a lot of blood. And the problem is, we are running out of blood supply.
TV drama is called Welcome to Milele. It talks about a group of Chinese doctors being sent for a medical aid project in a fictional African country, but it was actually filmed in Tanzania.
Tom Lam is one of our Chinese media experts. He can tell us what this drama is all about.
So it's part of a long promotion of China's medical aid to Africa. So the TV drama was aired in 2023, and it was actually the 60th anniversary of China's medical support to the African continent. First batch of doctors was sent to Algeria in 1963. And since then, the Chinese have claimed that they have treated 290 million Africans. And these people are often described in the state media as angels in white.
Welcome to Milele was released at the end of last year. The humanitarian work China did in Africa starting from the 60s is clearly something Beijing is proud of.
It was sponsored by the state and the People's Daily, which is the mouthpiece of the Chinese Communist Party, praised it as demonstrating the quote-unquote humanistic care of the Chinese medical workers towards Africa. And then they see there's like a bigger project of Chinese international image to promote how China is perceived internationally as a selfless friend to the Africans.
And who is this drama for? Who was it intended for? Where was it broadcast?
It was broadcast in various Chinese TV channels and also social media platforms. And the Chinese state media also said that we're talking about dubbing different language editions, including a Swahili version.
During our visit to Nairobi, we wanted to find out how African audiences responded. Did it make a splash? We sat down with one of our colleagues, Shem Otieno, or Oti, to have a chat about all things China from an African perspective.
Welcome to Milele Village. Milele means forever in Swahili.
It's not aired on any local channels as far as we are aware. I have looked at it on YouTube. It doesn't have that many views. But on the comment section, there are some very excited people talking about seeing the Tanzanian landscape, seeing the Tanzanian people or black people in it. There are people who are just happy to the show was shot both in Tanzania and in China.
好的，大家跟我读第一个单词，咪咪，咪咪，我的意思。阿拉夫，Sisi，Sisi，Sisi，Sisi.
What I've seen is that there would be a Swahili translation of the film, at least according to some Chinese media outlets that we are able to see, then maybe in Tanzania or airing in Tanzanian television, then we'd have a better a way to analyze or to gauge the kind of reception it gets.
We double-checked and we couldn't find it on digital TV schedules. The ambitious reach the producers might have hoped for hasn't materialized yet, which could be down to a lack of dubbing in local languages. So what would the Chinese Communist Party want to convey with it?
China was the first country that go to Africa and said, we are your friends and partners, because ideologically they have like similar anti-colonial, anti-imperialist path. And China consider itself as part of the Mao described as the third world. So China think that they share a similar development path and similar historical background with Africa.
You could argue that Welcome to Milele is designed to spread China's message. And Beijing does make a convincing argument about what it sees as its selfless help to Africa. Tom explains the historic background to China's first steps on the continent.
Back in the 1960s, China drew all these great leap forward, which caused a great famine. But they still send workers and material to Tanzania to help them build the Tanzania-Zambia railway. And Mao famously actually said that you have your difficulties and we have ours. We will help you to build this railway even if we have forsake building our own. And it sounds like a very selfless and very humanitarian effort.
The building of the Tanzania-Zambia Railway, or TAZARA, with Mao's pictures still set to be hanging in its headquarters, was a mammoth undertaking, as so many communist projects have been. It was done by a country that had its own enormous struggles at the time. As Tom mentioned, what is known as the Great Leap Forward was China's effort to modernize its economy within a short period of time, which led to the starvation of tens of millions of people. So the main message behind the construction of the TAZARA seems to be about China being a selfless friend. Although, to state the obvious, selflessness is not a geopolitical currency.
But Tanzania did pay back.
Guinea? Yes! Yes. USSR? Yeah. Tanzania? Yes, United States, no. Cameroon?
Yes.
Canada?
Oui. The draft resolution adopted.
In 1971, Tanzania was one of the active African countries to support Beijing's effort to join the UN because the PRC, which is the People's Republic of China, was not part of the UN because the Republic of China, which is now based in Taiwan, was the member, and there's the one China rivalry going on between these two regimes. Of the resolution that quote-unquote restore PRC right and status in the UN in 1971.
The resolution adopted on the 25th of October 1971, by which the General Assembly decided to restore to the People's Republic of China all of its rights and to...
Diplomatic support is just one way to return a favour. China has other pragmatic reasons for its mega projects in Africa.
Back in the 1960s, China helped Tanzania to build the Tanzanian-Zambian Railway. Zambia at that time was famous for its copper reserve. So this railway helped China and other countries also to go into Zambia to mine copper there. And as China's economic rise started in the early 2000s, China needs a lot of market as well as resources from Africa. So the Belt and Road Initiative that was launched in 2013 was actually based on this idea that China needs overseas market and resources for their economic engine. The DRC, Mali, Ghana, Namibia provide lithium metal reserve of 3 million tons. And the reason why China expanded their partnerships and acquisition in Africa is ensure the supply chain of this raw material and consolidate its position as the world leading lithium battery manufacturer to make electric vehicles. And they need markets to sell it because the weak domestic consumption, and Africa provide a huge market for Chinese goods.
From the construction of one railway to lucrative mega projects across the African continent, Beijing has left a lasting impression over the last few decades. Oti has seen it happening.
The road or the irrigation scheme in my village, the big expressway here that gives you 15 minutes from the central business district to the airport. There's a superhighway that was built before. Those are much more visible in terms of what China's trying to push in terms of its soft power.
Interpreting soft power in action is our territory. Deeds wouldn't mean much if not communicated. And China has plenty of reasons to want to tell its side of the story. Here are some tweets that we have voiced up from the so-called Wolf Warriors. They are Chinese diplomats who have adopted a confrontational tone in recent years.
It is Gaza, not Xinjiang, that is plagued by conflicts. It is millions of Muslims in Gaza, not Muslims in Xinjiang, that suffer from hunger, deportation and killing.
Applying salami tactics or crossing red lines on the Taiwan question and other sensitive issues is like racing cars on a cliff's edge, where a crash is almost inevitable.
China strongly deplores and opposes smears by any country or organization against Hong Kong's Safeguarding National Security Bill. Such smears and attacks will never succeed.
Nowadays, when the West accuse China of human rights abuses, for example, in Xinjiang, in Tibet, in Hong Kong, and also its military aggressions towards Taiwan, then if they put into a vote in the UN, then China would get all this help from its African brothers. So that's also helped China in their international standing and their ideological rivalry with the West.
China has its eyes set on a much bigger prize. And it is this ambition that is underpinned by its mega projects.
China has seen itself as a leader of the global South. They see itself as a counterweight of Western dominance and Western narrative and rhetoric. So they see itself as the spokesperson of African interests.
We have decided to invite the Argentine Republic, the Arab Republic of Egypt, the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates to become full members of BRICS.
Last year, BRICS has invited 6 new members, 2 of them being African country. China wants to form a non-Western bloc that could be a counterweight to the US-led G7. So I think Africa is considered to be a great asset for China to compete with the US for global leadership.
The colonial power would be code word for all of these other countries that were on the continent at some point who are not doing the same things the Chinese are doing.
The goal appears to have been set. Now, how do you sell it? Here's where Nairobi comes into play.
So Kenya is very strategic in terms of its location, first of all, and then also in terms of democratic stability. It's been a very stable country. There was a time when Kenya was being referred as an island of peace. There was also an open environment for media. Kenya is one of the freest media environments in the region. even before CGTN came, the BBC has had one big bureau here. The AP have a big bureau, Reuters. All of the major outlets have big bureaus. You can deploy anywhere from Nairobi easily. You can deploy to the Middle East, to Central Africa, to Southern Africa. Then there's the enabling environment, one of the fastest developing, and Kenya was looking to China for some support around the same time. So all of these factors played into CGTN being set up here in Nairobi.
CGTN stands for China Global Television Network. It's part of Beijing's big media expansion. Launched in 2016 as the international division of the Chinese state broadcaster under the auspices of the Communist Party.
China, since 2008, has put a lot of funding into the international media to portray China in a better light. For example, CGTN, which is an English language edition of CCTV, and they have different language editions and continent division. And one of them being the CGTN Africa, which is based in Nairobi. So they specifically targeting these African countries. And also they have like partnership with local broadcaster that would air the news report of Chinese state news agency, for example, Xinhua. And that's certainly helped China to get a foothold of media presence in Africa.
CGTN has a big, big office in Nairobi. I think there are about three floors of a big establishment in Nairobi. From what I understand, there are about 300 journalists working there. And there's many, many more correspondents across the continent. So you will find people in South Africa, people in Ghana, people in Egypt, in Sudan. Someone would actually be in the Central African Republic corresponding for CGTN. So it's a big, big operation.
This does sound like a big media empire that China has built over the last decades. Do we know how much money they have put into it?
The Chinese are quite opaque in terms of the expenditure on the continent. I mean, we will know about the loans they're giving countries because it makes them look good, but we'll never know how much they're spending in their media operations. They're paying journalists quite highly, especially when they came into Nairobi, for instance. They poached some of the best or the highest-ranking journalists across local media. We do know that the hardware costs a lot of money, having correspondents across the continent, I think, in some 40-plus countries out of 54, and they also deploy heavily, so that also costs some money. I think it goes into the millions of dollars, yes, but we do not know the actual figures that the Chinese have spent. They don't tell anyone that.
Here's something to give you an idea about the scale of this externally focused media operation. CGTN broadcasts in English, French, Russian, Spanish and Arabic, with international hubs in Nairobi, Washington and London. It has 6 television channels and 58 radio outlets, available in more than 160 countries and regions. Setting up a media operation like this is no mean feat.
The Chinese media big, big push in Africa begins somewhere around 2000, and it begins with the creation of the focus for the China-Africa Forum, FOCAC. And that is around the same time when China begins to give massive, massive loans to the African continent. So when this happens, China wants to tell its story, saying, okay, this is what we are. China tries to present itself as one of the leading developing countries, and Africa is home to a lot of developing countries. So part of it is trying to press its own narrative. And China, I think, has always been skeptical about what the Western media will say of it. So they're partly correcting perhaps what they view as skewed interpretation of China on the continent. But they want to say, this is what we are doing, and partly tell Chinese audiences what they're doing in Africa. CGTN comes to Nairobi in 2012. It's making a huge splash, and now it's much, much bigger across the continent as well. In terms of local employees, these are people who have had big careers in local media. So part of it is building on these brands, people who had names in the local media, using that brand to bring it to CGTN, who then employ them to do the same work but in a different platform. I think part of it is also seeing that if some people have a following, then that following might follow them to CGTN.
CGTN is not the only Chinese-controlled news outlet in Africa. Beijing's media presence on the continent goes back decades.
In the news media, there's a lot of 3 or 4 state-run media agencies operating in Africa. So there's the CGTN, China Global Television Network. There's Xinhua, which is the news agency. There's China Radio International, or CRI, which is also operating in local languages.
There
are Swahili programs, Hausa programs in Nigeria, and then there's China Daily, which is a weekly. Now, the other one is Star Times, which distributes channels. And then there's also Chinese channels, soaps. They distribute across Africa. So Star Times is a big, big distributor of programs.
Star Times is just as important as the actual media operation, if not more. It's a provider of digital and satellite TV services. And guess what? CGTN is included in all its basic packages. It's the hardware that is the vehicle for the soft power. And Beijing has come up with other ways to sway public opinion.
Since 2016, China has been training African journalists. So they are flown to China. They are trained there. It's been done before with scholarships to the US, the UK. People come back and then they become like proxies or surrogates for the Chinese government here. They report for their own news magazines, publications, talking about China's involvement in Africa, and they have very, very positive outlook. The reports themselves are very, very glowing. The Chinese establishments in African media also have very, very close working relationships with African editors. So like in Kenya, they have involvement with the Editors Guild in Nairobi. So they are very, very close there. With that. Now, China Daily also has a very interesting relationship with the local media. For instance, in Kenya, there is Capital FM, which is a big radio. It has a website, but on its own website, there is a section with China Daily, which publishes content from China Daily directly.
You are listening to the Global Jigsaw from BBC Monitoring.
Everyone's talking about BRIEX, a small Calgary mining company that struck gold half a world away.
They sold a $6 billion gold discovery to the world.
They kept drilling, they kept getting good results.
BRIEX had found the one we all hoped to find.
Investors jumped at the chance to buy up shares.
Everybody was getting in on it.
Suddenly everybody in town was going to be rich.
But there was a problem. You see, the gold, well, it didn't exist.
There's nothing there.
There's no gold. This is a scam.
The $6 billion gold scam from the BBC World Service and CBC. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Oti mentioned that CGTN employs 300 people, some Chinese, many African. What do we know about the chain of command?
What we know is that in the higher roles, the roles of editor, they are usually Chinese people. So I think part of it is to try and see so what goes out, because the editor has the last word on what goes out.
Here's a curious detail. They are not called editors. They're called supervisors. The channel produces one-hour-long bulletins twice daily, as well as political talk shows. We watched a bit of their output while in Nairobi to get a sense of their journalism.
And I'm Beatrice Marshall from CGTN. What is the significance of this 60 years for Tanzania?
60 years of friendship between Tanzania and China. Remind us.
They won't cover Taiwan on the continent, unless, of course, it is to say the one China policy. So we saw the Taiwanese elections, but any reporting from here was about Burkina Faso pledging or reiterating the one China policy. Kenya, the same, the one China policy. Nigeria, one China policy.
So the actual news spec, elections in Taiwan, that wasn't mentioned at all?
You wouldn't see it anywhere in Chinese media. So yeah, the point is always the one China policy. It feels like a requirement for African countries that you need to pledge your belief in the one China policy to be able to get the kind of things you need from Beijing. What we have seen with Chinese media is what I think they call constructive journalism, the journalism that does not offend, does not want to expose partners. And these are African countries in any bad light. So Of course, they cover the whole spectrum of topics. It will be tech, it will be politics, it would be sport, it would be culture. But it has to be a very sanitized version of what is happening.
So what is the message that Beijing thinks would appeal to the local audience? How is it making itself kawaii or lovable on the African continent?
China wants to present itself as the fastest growing developing country. So we are a developing country, you are a developing country. Look, we brought this number of million people out of poverty in a very short time. You can also do it. We've built roads. Let us show you how to build roads. You need money for something. We can give you this money and we can send some engineers to you. There's all of this narrative of we are helping you, supporting you, but we're not lecturing you. We're not talking to you about human rights. We're not talking to you about what you should do as a country, which is the greatest criticism they have about the West, that the West is always interfering in the affairs of other countries.
After all this investment, who is the message reaching? How popular is CGTN? Let's talk about the holy grail of broadcasting, viewership figures.
In terms of viewership of international media, the BBC, CNN, Al Jazeera are the top three. Media viewership, for instance, of CGTN, it's very difficult to ascertain. But what we have seen from some scholars who've done surveys see very low viewership rates of below 10% comparatively to the other media organizations. It tells you that the reach is not that huge. First, because its syndication, for instance, through local television stations, local media outlets. But this syndication is not sufficient. In terms of viewership, there is competition, and they are not the first go-to media for news.
Yet many with a special interest tune in to CGTN.
So these are traders, for instance, who import stuff from China. They want to know what is happening in Chinese markets. People who are in academia want to know what is the narrative that Chinese are peddling. So these are the people who will be going to see the television. Now, on another end, there's people who go to Star Times, which has soaps, dramas, and Chinese kung fu shows. Now, those people are going there to see the cultural side of stuff. But still, the viewership, as I said, is a little lower than we expect.
Audience reach is not just about numbers. And here comes a more subtle push, relying on pundits with China background.
The pundits would come back. They would be on hand from time to time to push Chinese narratives. So, for instance, when there's BRI, the 10th anniversary, we saw a lot of articles in Kenyan media as opinion pieces appearing in the newspapers. They'll talk about the debt, especially because the West has always been saying that the Chinese loans are a debt trap. So China debt trap diplomacy, they'll come and count and say, all of these tangible things that the Chinese are giving us have done. So they'll talk about the roads, they'll talk about the irrigation schemes, they'll talk about funding for education and Confucius Institutes and things like that.
Let's look at the story from the Chinese perspective again. What can we glean from Beijing's recent official narrative?
China is not buying Africa, it is building Africa.
This CGTN clip was tweeted by the Chinese embassy in Nairobi.
Xi Jinping met with the leaders of the African Union and it said China's policy towards Africa was based on the principle of sincerity, real result, amity and good faith.
What does it sound like in Chinese?
So in Chinese, it is called 真实清诚. So 真 is being real, and 实 is substantial, firm. So I guess mean like pragmatic and real result. And 清, I think, is like dear. And then 诚 is sincerity. So basically, I think it's just like a literal translation. But in Chinese, it also means very good, but doesn't mean anything that substantial. But it kind of gives you the vibe of what China see Africa as a partner, really warm feeling, you know, friendly.
Warm, friendly, dear friends.
And also real and pragmatic and providing real results.
And there's more of this kind of language coming from the Central Propaganda Department, which Tom will decipher for us.
At the CCP's 20th National Congress in October 2022, She instructs the Central Propaganda Department to accelerate the development of Chinese discourse and narrative system and effectively communicate the voice of China to portray a credible, lovable and respectable image of China.
So what jumped at me here is the word lovable, because we are talking about geopolitics and that's probably the last word you'd expect. And in Chinese, ka'ai, lovable, which also means cute.
It was proposed against the background that in recent years, China's image internationally has not been very good since the COVID pandemic and also what China has been accused of its conduct in Xinjiang and also in Hong Kong. So they want to change that narrative. But also the debt trap that the Western media has accused China of by giving loans that the African country could not pay, then in turn they would take control of those infrastructure projects that China financed. They also want to change that narrative in the continent as well. And that's why they are having this campaign of portraying China as a credible, lovable and respectable country.
And this is what lovable means on the ground. Back to Oti.
In my village, or somewhere near my village, for about 370 kilometers from Nairobi, there was an irrigation scheme done by the Chinese. And everyone in the village knows that this has been done by the Chinese. It's a tangible thing that people see. So if it is a hospital, people will tell you, we were walking this many, many kilometers before to get to this hospital. But now we have something close by and it has all the equipment. And if there is a Chinese doctor involved, they'll say, well, these Chinese people are doing a fantastic job. So all of these are the kind of narrative that they want in their media. China wants to project itself as one of the bigger powers. And if there's any opportunity for them to try and poke holes into the ideals that are being espoused by the other global powers, they'll do it. China thinks it has an opportunity to tell its narrative. And its narrative is in the Belt and Road Initiative. Its narrative is the doctors it's sending to Africa. Its narrative is also the fact that it's not interfering with anyone. And part of it is also like all of these people-to-people ties. The soft power they want to show is nice, friendly power who's not coming to lecture you and who has the kind of things you don't have as a continent which they can't provide for you.
China might have started using its old anti-imperialist credentials to ask the questions many politicians on the continent might find timely. What did the West ever do for you?
I think to a large extent it has to do with the chance to tell its own stories, because China mistrusts the West, of course. I mean, it's a competing global power, and part of it is trying to correct or to tell the narrative that it wants to project. So if the US are saying debt trap, China will come and counter that and say, no, we are not actually doing debt trap diplomacy. We are building actual roads and not doing for the people. The media is just one of those, but big investment in terms of loan, the big investment in terms of scholarships, Confucius Institutes, the international collaborations, the flying of journalists to China, all of those work together to tell the Chinese story better than, say, its other media.
And how is China perceived by people on the continent?
So there have been some surveys that have shown that China is one of the most preferred big powers on the continent. We understand it's declining since COVID. I think the fact that COVID came out of Wuhan beats its image to a large extent. During COVID also, China wasn't the go-to country for vaccines, although it did supply vaccines. And around the same time, China had to dial down on its lending to African countries. Zambia defaulted during the COVID period.
Good evening. Welcome to the Diamond News Desk at 8. The top stories in the news tonight. Zambia defaults on debt interest payment. Zambia,
and so there was a massive anger there. In Kenya as well, for instance, the reduction in the amount of money they were sending in meant some projects were stalled. And so there were all of these feelings of not being the partner that it had promised to be.
As the world was dealing with the pandemic, Zambia's default was somewhat lost in the news. And as Otti was saying, there was a lot of anger there towards China, the single biggest creditor. Let's look at the other case study, that of Kenya, to see if the weathercock has changed direction. 20 years ago, Nairobi articulated its pivot to Beijing in a policy called Look East under President Mwai Kibaki.
There was some bit of an economic recession. And then when Kibaki comes, it starts with this Look East policy. Now, Look East is look to China, basically. So China becomes a very big partner to Kenya's development. It also coincides with the time when China is doing a lot more on the continent in terms of loans, in terms of making inroads diplomatically.
Then came more loans with very few strings attached. By 2010, China became Africa's largest trading partner. Fast forward to the Kenyan presidential campaign of 2022, and one of the front runners, William Ruto, had been big on Chinese loans while he was vice president. But as a presidential candidate, and later as president, he somewhat changed his tune.
One of the things he did was to bash Chinese loans. He was criticizing the debt. He was saying that they were going to make sure that the debt is restructured. Then he was also talking about Chinese businesses coming into Kenya to do retail trade. And they were saying that once we get to power, we won't allow these small traders to take the small businesses from our people. Of course, China was noticing what's happening there. So President William Ruto, when he came to power, he said he found an economy that was, to use the words of his deputy, dilapidated. Because of the shrinking economy, they asked to restructure the debt, but that doesn't happen. But in the period between him taking over and on the back of the campaign rhetoric, Ruto started to look west, and looking west is going back to the US and the UK allies.
China is not our largest debt holder. We have huge relationships with the World Bank, with the IMF, with the European Union, with the US.
Ruto is trying to diversify his chances economically. Kenya has signed big deals with IMF. But also President Ruto went to China and tried to renegotiate some loans.
A year into his presidency, the Kenyan leader is off to Beijing, and his rhetoric there seems quite different.
Kenya and China have been friends, and that friendship has not stagnated. It's been growing.
William Ruto, during his trip to China in October 2023 to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Belt and Road Initiative, was quoted by Chinese media as praising China's BRI, including the Mombasa-Nairobi Railway.
Ever taken a ride on the train yourself?
Yes.
What was it like?
Yes. Oh, yes, it's quite an experience.
To further helping Kenya's and Africa's industrialization and also agricultural modernization. And he was also quoted as supporting the One China policy and support Beijing's position on their domestic human rights issues. And in an interview with Chinese state news agency Xinhua, Ruto was also refuting the notion in the Western media that China was using this debt trap.
While he was bigging up China's role in Africa for Chinese audiences, Ruto might have felt snubbed by his hosts upon arrival.
He was met at the airport by the transport minister, while other people were met by presidents. He was given a shorter red carpet when he went there.
Shorter red carpet. Ouch. In contrast, the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was greeted by traditional dancers at the airport when he landed for the same event. We at BBC Monitoring often observe this. The message changes depending on the audience. So let's have a last look at China's image in Africa. What's the perception after 20-odd active years on the continent?
Africans in general still view Chinese relatively positive. For example, we have these Afrobarometers national surveys in 34 African countries from 2019 to 2021. The survey showed that 63% Africans hold positive views of Chinese assistance and influence on the continent, which is higher than the US, which is at 60%. And China also remains second to the US as the preferred development models for Africans.
Perhaps in the Chinese Communist Party HQ in Beijing, this is viewed as a job well done. So what is left to achieve in Africa? Let's get back to Otti for his thoughts on the future of the Chinese media operation on the continent.
Since the pandemic, what we have seen is that the Chinese media empire, so to speak, is not expanding as it used to be. We understand that some bureaus for Xinhua, for instance, have been closed. We are seeing what would be stalling in terms of its investments, in terms of its deployment, in terms of its coverage of the continent. For the next couple of years, China is still going to use CRI, the China Radio International. CGTN is still going to play a big part of Chinese media operations on the continent. It will have deployed people who look like me across the continent talking on televisions that are watched by people from all walks of life. You won't have to go to CGTN to get information about China when you can't get that from a commentator who, as an individual who is not smart enough in terms of media literacy, will not understand is speaking on behalf of China. But silently, the journalists China is training, the media houses it's partnering with, the surrogates or the people who are being deployed across the continent to say the Chinese narrative that they want to convey would be playing a big part in the kind of soft power for China.
Beijing seems to have settled in Africa for the long haul, just as the Chinese workers I came across in Nairobi's Chinatown.
一点点.
一点点, yes.
Beijing
then? Oh, Guangzhou.
Guangzhou then?
Guangzhou.
So how long have you been in Nairobi for?
5 years.
5 years?
Chinese corporation is big.
So you have lots of compatriots.
Yeah, Chinese community is not so big. I don't think it's big.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service brought to you by the Global Jigsaw podcast team, Krista Shatori and me, Crassy Twig. Thank you for listening, and you can find more geopolitical storytelling on our podcast feed. Just search for the Global Jigsaw wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone's talking about BRIEX, a small Calgary mining company that struck gold half a world away.
They sold a $6 billion gold discovery to the world.
They kept drilling, they kept getting good results.
BRIEX had found the one we all hoped to find.
Investors jumped at the chance to buy up shares.
Everybody was getting in on it.
Suddenly everybody in town was going to be rich.
But there was a problem. You see, the gold, well, it didn't exist.
There's nothing there.
There's no gold. This is a scam.
The $6 billion gold scam from the BBC World Service and CBC. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.